Welcome to the Cleveland City Club, the citadel of free speech. My name is Sheldon Braverman, and I am president of the club. I welcome to this important City Club forum those in attendance, those listening on our regular radio network, and the national C-SPAN audience. The Cleveland City Club, founded in 1912, is the oldest continuous free speech forum in the country. Throughout our 83-year history, many national and international leaders have spoken from our platform. We firmly believe in the free expression of all ideas and the benefits of an open exchange of differing views. Our radio network spans 38 states and includes 174 radio stations. Examples of major political leaders who have spoken before the City Club in the past are William Jennings Bryan, Theodore Roosevelt, Barry Goldwater, Ronald Reagan, Robert Kennedy, Thomas Dewey, Jimmy Carter, Franklin D. Roosevelt, our last two presidents, George Bush and President Bill Clinton, and Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. Today, we are proud to add to this impressive list of speakers, H. Ross Perot. For most Americans, Mr. Perot was unknown until he announced as an independent candidate for the presidency in 1992. His efforts to be elected president with no Democratic or Republican affiliation, along with his political agenda of fiscal responsibility and federal budgetary restraints, had a significant effect on the 1992 presidential election. This outspoken Texas billionaire won 19% of the votes. Mr. Perot is now traveling the country in an effort to organize a national third party called the Reform Party. In order for his new political party to qualify for the next presidential election in Ohio, he must collect approximately 35,000 ballot signatures. It appears Mr. Perot was successful in obtaining sufficient signatures to be on the California ballot. Ross Perot's background tells us much about the man. After being raised in Texarkana, Texas, he then attended and graduated from the United States Naval Academy in 1953. His leadership was evident at that time, being elected student class president. Ross often refers to his loving parents and upbringing as evidence of his commitment to strong family ties. In 1962, he started a one-man data processing company known as the Electronic Data Systems. Today, EDS is a multi-billion dollar corporation employing more than 70,000 people. Ultimately, he sold EDS to General Motors for $2.5 billion. Mr. Perot continues to be most successful in the world of business. Additionally, he appears to be committed to changing the political landscape. Whether or not our speaker will be successful in forming a new political party and will be its candidate for presidency, only time will tell. However, there is no question that both the Democrats and Republicans are looking at Mr. Perot's efforts closely to figure out what effect it will have on their chances of success. To tell us more about his views and the political agenda, the Cleveland City Club is proud to present H. Ross Perot.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you. Thank you. I'm particularly delighted to be with all of you tonight, but particularly glad to have all the young people who are with us tonight, because everything we are doing is for you. Our purpose in doing all of this is to make sure that the 21st century is the best in our country's history. The reason we have to do all of this is that our generation in this great country, the greatest nation in the history of man, is the first generation to build up an unconscionable debt. And if we don't straighten it out, we will pass a burden on to you that is not fair. And we will straighten it out. As we talk about the problems tonight, don't get discouraged. Don't worry. These are problems we can fix. Never forget that. And always through this discussion, remember, you own this country. The people in Washington work for you. They are your servants. And only in America would your servants have a better retirement plan and better health care than you. Think about it. Okay. But when the day clears, you are the boss under the Constitution. And if you will reassert your rights as the boss of this country, and if you will use the most powerful weapon ever created in the history of man, your vote, and if you won't be manipulated by dumb little things like the Willie Horton ad, we'll get this country back on the track. But if you're going to believe every stupid thing you hear, keep in mind, both parties have dirty tricks team. The Wall Street Journal had a big section the other day. Clinton puts together a nasty boys team. We don't need nasty boys. We need facts, right? Okay. So don't pay much attention to these little ads that say, I'm going to scare you to death tonight, and you're going to do what I tell you to do. I can give you 1,000 examples. Why do they do dirty tricks? It works. If it stops working, they won't do them. How will it stop working? If you know so much about what's going on, you can't be manipulated. If you don't understand these issues, then anybody's little one-minute gimmick, the last thing you hear, will be what you do. That's politics today. We had a three-day meeting in Dallas. We brought together the finest policymakers in this country. They discussed in depth how to fix Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and on and on and on. We have a book of this meeting. All of those speeches are included in this book. Two great speakers from Ohio, by the way, Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur and Congressman John Kasich. The speeches are clear, they're succinct, the facts, the numbers, and all these speeches are there. I certainly urge all of you in your high school classes, and certainly every person here tonight and every person watching on television, get these books and understand the issues, and then you can't be manipulated. If you and I don't do this, these problems won't be resolved because the special interests, this thing's about to fall or something, the special interests control Congress. Who are the special interests? The special interests are people. The special interests are people who pragmatically give huge amounts of money to both parties. And they don't have an ideology. They just want influence. If you wonder about that, get the newspaper articles about the recent Medicare legislation. The money came pouring in at the last minute. Why? To get special deals cut for Medicare. Does that have anything to do with making a better Medicare system? No. Does that have anything to do with making Medicare more cost-effective? No. That's the kind of stuff this Reform Party is going to bring a halt to. Don't ever get discouraged while we're in the middle of the fight. It won't be pretty. You should have been in California. Everything that could be done was done. The people of California had to climb a cliff covered with ice. It takes 2 years to create a political party in California. The two parties don't want a new political party. God bless the people of California. They did it in 18 days, right? Not bad. Okay. Now, here's what excites me. People in Ohio are very competitive. If California can do it in 18 days, you can do it in 17 days. We've got 25 days, so we'll have time to celebrate after it's over. But don't ever get discouraged in the middle of the battle. And think about the great people who created this country. Think about our ancestors, many of whom came through Ellis Island. They came off Ellis Island into New York City. They couldn't speak English. And I'm sure the young people saying, well, surely, Ross, there was some welfare program to take care of them. No, they scrambled. They took care of themselves. And then some of them decided to head west. You say, well, surely the government had some program to provide covered wagons and oxen. Sorry, they had to go out and earn the money, save the money, get the covered wagon, get the oxen. Wow, okay, now we're set. They can go west to California on the interstate. Sorry, there were no interstates. Well, were there roads? No, there weren't even paths. Say, well, were there markers about this way's west? No, they were on their own. Well, certainly they must have had a chain of Holiday Inns going across to California so you'd have a place to spend the night. Sorry, folks, you slept on the ground. Well, didn't they have at least government-sponsored McDonald's restaurants where you could drive your wagon through and get something to eat? They hunted for food, and they produced strong, great, self-reliant people. That's the stock you and I came from. Let's go to the people who fought and won World War II. Let's go through the people who grew up in the Depression and their reward was to fight and win World War II. That's tough. Anytime your life's on the line for the country, that's 100 times tougher than just being out here working on forming a political party and turning the country back to the people. This is a piece of cake compared to fighting in Vietnam, Korea, or all the other wars. Now, you and I will have to do it. Nobody can do it for us. And as you think about it, if every prior generation left us a better, stronger country, it would be so wrong for our generation to saddle our children with debt, and we won't. What's unique about this new party? It will belong to the people only. It will not have a penny of special interest money in it now or ever. Well, do people really want a new party? 62% of the American people want a new party. In any free society where a majority of the people are not represented by either party, the time has come to form a new party for a majority of the people, 62%. This party will elect a president in 1996, and it will be the swing vote that determines who gets elected in the House and Senate in every seat in 1996, and we will have a cohesive, united team in the White House and in Congress dedicated to the reforms that must be made to put our house back in order. And that sure beats the train wreck we've got now. Can we agree on that? Okay. Every student here tonight who will be 18 by election day in 1996 can participate in creating this new party, and I hope you will. To the young people here tonight, you say, will people really do this for us? You will never know how much your parents and grandparents love you until you have children. And then, all of my children who are grown who have children have come to me one at a time and said, I now know how much you loved us. You just can't understand it until you have your own little children. Okay. The people really want a new party. Hear the numbers. Yes, they do. 29% of the people say they are Democrats, 30% say they're Republicans, 39% say they are independents. But of the 29% who say they are Democrats, 52% want a new party. Of the 30% who say they're Republicans, 48% want a new party. And of all the independents, 69% want a new party. And that's how you get to 62% of all the voters. That should send a real signal to the two-party system. If half their membership wants out, maybe it's time they come back home and listen to the people in their district. Why do we need to form a new party? In 1964, 76% of the people trusted the United States government. In 1994, that number had dropped to 19%. We cannot get the changes we may need to make until we restore trust and confidence in our government. In 1960, when John Kennedy became president, not that long ago, we ran this entire great country's government for $100 billion a year. Say, gee, Ross, the interest on the debt's bigger than that now. But that's what we did in 1960. Now we spend $1.5 trillion a year to operate our government. A question, are you 15 times better off? Answer, irrevocably, no. The standard of living of 4 out of 5 Americans has dropped. The answer is no. What is my point? Big government doesn't work. We tried it. We have paid an enormous price for it, and it did not work. And we are left with $4.8 trillion in debt, a number so big that most people can't grasp it. I'm going to tell you how in a minute. The Clinton tax increase, to show you how big the problem is, was the largest in the history of our country, but it did not include even a plan to balance the budget ever, and all of his Office of Management and Budget forecasts show that it would never balance the budget ever, and that the deficit and the debt would take off like a rocket, starting in the beginning of the 21st century. Go to page 25 of President Clinton's 1995 budget, and you will find that the next generation of children to be born, your children, high school students, the next generation to be born, our government forecast will pay an 82% tax rate. There goes the American dream. If 82 cents out of your paycheck goes to the federal government, 18 cents won't work. We've got to deal with this. We've got a fairly narrow window of opportunity to deal with it. It's like having a patient in intensive care that's bleeding arterially. You'd want to bring in the finest doctors and nurses and have them work as a team to save the patient and stop the bleeding, right? What do we have now? We got the doctors, using this analogy, in Washington, it'd be like the doctors fighting with the nurses and not stopping the bleeding. We've got to have a united team that just goes in and does it in 97. Say, well, do we really have to do this? Yes, we must. For example, in California, only 13% of the voters believe that the Democrats and Republicans are doing a good job. As I've mentioned, the independent voters are far and away in the majority, but they don't have a voice. And we've got to have a voice, and we will have a voice. And as the importance, you say, well, why do we have to organize? Why can't we just have a voice? Organized teams will beat disorganized teams 10 times out of 10. We have to get organized. We're not effective if we're not organized. Well, how do people think about all this? Two-thirds of the American people believe our government is on the wrong track. In business, you'd fire the management, right? 93% of the American people think the government wastes the taxpayers' money. In business, you'd replace the people at the top. 88% of the people believe that our leaders in the federal government tell us whatever it takes to get elected and not what they really believe. 73% say that our politicians work for themselves and their own gain and not the people they represent. This is a sad indictment over the greatest country in the history of man, and you and I and millions of good, decent people like you are going to have to take our country back in the 1996 election. Well, Ross, with this situation, what does the highest priority have to be? We must restore the trust and confidence of the American people in their government. And sad things have happened to the point that only 19% of the American people trust their government today. For example, the recently released Packwood Diaries, where you could read that he had tried to get lobbyists to pay the alimony for his ex-wife. If you had somebody in your company that did something like that, you not only would fire them, you'd put them on a rocket into space. He also had a staff member leave to become a lobbyist, but the person wouldn't hire the staff member unless the senator would agree to see the person that hired the staff member whenever that person wanted to see him. And the senator wrote in his diary, "It's fine with me." We have former presidents, now keep in mind, think of people working third shifts. Think of people cleaning the streets. Think of people in all these hotels making the beds. They're just the people that make the world go around. Think of the policemen out there with their lives on the line. They're paying taxes so that every former president can live a regal life and never compromise their ethics or integrity and never embarrass our country, right? That's the only reason to do it. We have one president who got $2 million for making two 20-minute speeches in Asia. We have another president who just came back from a speech in Vietnam where they admit that they paid him six figures, but nobody will say whether it's $100,000 or $999,000. Either way, that is wrong. We didn't put those people in office to cash in when they left. We don't pay them a royal lot for a royal life to, in addition to cash in. We've got senior members in the House and Senate who, for some reason, were able to buy nice houses at dramatically below the market price. I wonder why. That's got to stop. We've got congressmen and senators flying all over the place with the special interest paying the bills for weekends and trips and junkets to play golf, tennis, so on and so forth. You wouldn't let anybody in your purchasing department do that in your company. We shouldn't let anybody that's our servant in Washington spending our taxpayers' money do it. One of the problems that corrupts our process is that it costs so much to conduct a political campaign. For example, believe it or not, in 1994, and this was not a presidential year, on federal campaigns, they spent $600 million. So the boys and the girls with the money are the people who have the voice. Our president campaigned that he would do campaign finance reform, and he has taken trips to California to attend $100,000 a plate dinners to raise money for his next campaign. I find that inconsistent. They're so pragmatic. The Republicans were starving for money. Then they got control of the House and Senate, and the independent voters gave it to them. It's the only way they could get it. And we did not give it to them. And then they had a giant fundraiser and raised, and it was $1,000 a plate. 4,000 people attended, but they raised $11 million, which means 7,000 people made a contribution and didn't even get a hot meal. This is not what American politics should be, because influence does buy power. And the evidence is all over the place. Our Congress and our legislative process of passing laws and figuring out how to solve problems is basically flawed because they consider one problem at a time. They will work on Medicare, they'll work on Medicaid, they'll work on Social Security, they'll work on balancing the budget. In fact, all of these things are intertwined like the pieces of a very complex puzzle. And it would be like building a car, saying, I'll let you build the wheels, I'll let you build the engine, you take care of the body, you do the interior, and then when it all came together, none of it would fit, right? No, you have to put it all together. Our system has that problem. We don't have a single social program that works well, and I'm going to explain to you why. It's because these social programs are very complex, and we don't do the steps you have to go through to make a complex system work. The Medicare system is far more complex than the space shuttle. You wouldn't think of not carefully engineering and testing every little piece of that space shuttle. Test, 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 right? Here's the way Medicare is being re-engineered. No blueprint. Everybody just throwing things in the bill at the last minute, the lobbyists coming in, putting money on the table, getting a special deal cut. Nobody knows what it'll cost. Nobody really knows what it is. They were getting ready to pass it. Nobody had read the bill. Why? Because it hadn't been printed. Only in America would you put up with that. And we're talking billions here. You say, how big is it? Here is how goofy it gets. In 1965, when Medicare was passed, our government forecast that it would cost $9 billion in 1990. In fact, it cost $106 billion. And guess who pays for every mistake they make? You do. Now, if I make enough mistakes in business, I go broke. And so do you. But no matter how many mistakes they make, they just raise taxes. You've got to have discipline on that, or there is no reason to wake up and use your head and plan these things. Medicaid, when it was created in the 60s, was forecasted to cost only $1 billion in 1990. It cost $91.3 billion. I'm now going through the arterial bleeding I discussed with you earlier. The annual cost of Medicare and Medicaid today is $250 billion. It's growing at 15% a year. The cost of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security in the year 2030 is forecasted to be $3.9 trillion, or twice the cost, more than twice the cost, to operate our country today, our entire country. The budget, $4.8 trillion in debt, and I said I would try to communicate how big $4.8 trillion is. I propose tonight that we pay the debt. I propose that we round up every penny, nickel, dime, dollar, every $100 bill, every piece of currency in circulation. Put it in one place and go pay the debt. Now, you and I are all broke, right? We gave up all our money, but we did pay the debt in one night. You know what the big flaw with that logic is? We don't have $4.8 trillion of currency. And that's my point. Have I convinced you that the debt's too big? If the debt exceeds the total amount of money in circulation, I think it's too big. The world's latest superpower should be debt-free. And you've never heard this even discussed in Washington, should have a substantial cash reserve to take care of emergencies. You need that in your personal life. Your company needs that. And believe me, the world's last superpower needs that. And we can do that if we all join together and work on it. Let's look at the future forecast. The budget deficit, that's the debt increase for 1 year in the year 2020, is forecasted to be $1.4 trillion. That's what we spend to run our country today. The budget deficit, and you say, whose numbers are these? These are the Office of Management and Budget from the White House. This is not out of the Farmer's Almanac. I mean, this is straight from the White House. Okay. The budget deficit in the year 2030 is forecasted to be $4.1 trillion. Most people can't understand what is the problem with Social Security. See, Social Security should be a system where everything they take out of your paycheck and everything your employer puts in goes into a fund that is invested, and when you retire, you get the benefits. That's not the way it works. Everything that your employer puts in and everything that you put in is spent now to take care of the people who are retired. And people are living longer. Let me give you the numbers. In 1950, we had 16 people at work for every retiree. That's manageable. Today, there are a little over 3 workers for every person who's retired. That's the problem. Looking ahead, now people are living longer, and that is wonderful. But the old system doesn't work. Because looking ahead, in the year 2020, we'll only have 2 people at work for every retired person. We've got to fix the system. We're not going to think about getting rid of it, but you can't leave it the way it is. Nobody wants to touch it because it's controversial. Well, if we don't touch it, we've left our children an unsolvable problem. Now, here's some things they don't get in Washington that the average person on the street understands. They really haven't gotten focused at all. That if we did everything perfect, and we didn't have a growing, expanding economy, and we didn't have a growing, expanding middle class, and we didn't have people making better wages every year, we won't have the tax pump to pay all this off. Our ticket out of Death Valley is a growing, expanding economy with every American working at a good paying job. Can we create that? Yes. And we have got the biggest lever in the world to create it. The most precious thing in America is the middle class. The middle class can afford to buy things. That makes us the biggest buyer of goods and services in the world. And all of these countries that take advantage of their people that don't have a middle class, like Mexico, to come real close, those folks can't buy anything. Remember all these American companies that ran that? Walmart opened a big store, Wall Street Journal, 72 cash registers ringing. A couple weeks later, they said they closed all but 10. JCPenney went down there and then just pulled out. People who don't make anything can't buy anything, right? But when you've got the biggest market buyers in the world, the middle class, if you preserve, protect, and increase the middle class, you've got something magic. Everybody in the world wants to sell to us because we can buy. And guess what we do? We negotiate the dumbest trade agreements in the history of man because everybody that's ever been a chief trade negotiator becomes a foreign lobbyist, makes $500,000 and $600,000 a year. They all get together, hold hands, and hum, and move your jobs overseas, and that will destroy our country. No ifs, ands, and buts. You've got a great woman in Congress from this state named Marcy Kaptur. I call her the Steel Magnolia of Washington. Every guy up chief, nobody runs over Marcy. You don't, we have a bumper sticker in Texas that says, don't mess with Texas. They've got one in Washington that says, don't mess with Marcy. She's not going to bend or break just because you put a lot of pressure on her. She has strong convictions. She's got this figured out. She's got a beautiful little presentation that shows, see, all these $150 tennis shoes that kids kill one another for on the city streets are now made in Asia in the cheapest market you can find, and they keep moving the factories. If it's 20 cents an hour, they go there. If it's 15, they go there. Cheaper the better. Total cost of those tennis shoes is less than $5. You say, but Ross, they made them in Asia. It must cost a fortune to ship them to the U.S. 22 cents a pair. You say, Ross, why do they sell them for $150? To make profit. At those prices, you could make those tennis shoes in this country and make a terrific profit, right? But you just make more going overseas. You say, well, what's the solution? When you've got the biggest buy of goods and services in the world as you market it, you've got to preserve and protect your middle class and strengthen it. You just look at everybody and smile around the world and say, anybody that wants to can do business in the USA. Just put your factory here and conform to our rules and regulations, and we'd be delighted to have you. And then if someone from Europe says, well, but we'd like to work out a deal where we make it here and ship it there, I'd say, well, let's look at your wage levels and your benefits. If they're the same or better than ours, we'll go head-to-head with you. But we've got to sell you as much this year as you sold us. Then, if you go down south of the border, and I'm going just for a minute and I'll close up. See, we were told that President Salinas was George Washington II. This is how our government misleads us. He's not. We know that now. We were told that Mexico is a role model of an emerging democratic society. We now know it's not. We were told that we would have a giant trade surplus with Mexico. This year, our trade, now keep in mind, a trade surplus is good. That means money coming into here. Goods going out. Trade deficit means money going down there to buy their goods. Got a $17 to $20 billion trade deficit with Mexico this year. To show you how your government misleads you, you remember when President Zedillo just came in and paid us $700 million back on the $52 billion guarantee that all of you good, decent, hardworking people made to stabilize the peso? Actually, you did it to pay off the big Mexican investors who bought the Tesabonos at a discount and got rich, handing it back to the government at 100 cents on the dollar. You're not paid for that. See, they told you he was paying you $700 million earlier. Fact. 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 He owes us, Mexico owes us $2 billion. They couldn't pay $2 billion. They could only pay $700 million. They had to renegotiate the $1.3 billion and spread it out. And you and I were never told that. Would you let anybody stay on your payroll that did that to you and your company? No. Absolutely not. And now I'll close on trade with this. The biggest trade deficit we have with Mexico has nothing to do with normal goods and is not reported in the $17 to $20 billion deficit. $120 billion a year is flooding across illegal drugs, is flooding across our border from Mexico. That's chemical warfare against our children, and I can guarantee you, as they say at the men's warehouse, you put this new Reform Party in power, and we will stop the chemical warfare against our country. Now, in closing, I've got to close. In closing, I can summarize everything I have said today with these words. The budget should be balanced, the treasury should be refilled, the public debt should be reduced, and the arrogance of public officials must be controlled. Do you agree with that? These are not my words. Cicero spoke these words 2,000 years ago. I repeat them to you tonight to point out history does repeat itself. Please, if you feel that we need a party that represents the people, join us in our efforts to get the party registered in Ohio. Call 1-800-96-PARTY and help us make history. Let's get it done in Ohio. Thank you very much.
This evening at the special City Club Forum, held in cooperation with Leadership Lake County, we are listening to Mr. H. Ross Perot, who is leading an effort to establish a new political party here in Ohio, as well as numerous other states. We will return to Mr. Perot in a few minutes, but first, a few announcements. We welcome to the City Club Forum the longest continuously running free speech forum in the country. Our welcome is for both members and guests in this room, those watching on C-SPAN and those listening to radio station WCLV or one of the more than 170 stations throughout the country, including WFSQ in Tallahassee, Florida. We invite you to consider joining the City Club. There are membership applications in the front hall. If you would like to suggest programs or order a tape of this evening's forum, please call us at 216 216-
621-0082. An important goal of Leadership Lake County is to include our future leaders in these joint programs with the Cleveland City Club. Area high school students attending the 1995 City Club Forum Series programs in Lake County are sponsored by the Hershey Foundation. This generous grant for 1995 has provided the opportunity for two students and one faculty advisor from each of the participating schools in Lake County to gain another perspective on civic events as well as public discourse. Our thanks to the Hershey Foundation and Deborah S. Gurin, President. We welcome the high school students and sponsors who are here this evening. Our Leadership Lake County City Club Forum Series program in Lake County will be with Mr. Richard Thornburg, who served as U.S. Attorney General and Governor for the state of Pennsylvania on Wednesday, November 15th at the Pine Ridge Country Club in Wickliffe. His topic will be crime in America and the O.J. Simpson trial's impact on the American criminal justice system. Call Leadership Lake County 951-6431 for reservations. In our regular Friday program tomorrow, we will present Mr. Ira Glasser, Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union. Coming up the next week, Wednesday, November 1st, will be our debate on the stadium syntax extension, with Go Cleveland Chairman Paul Carlton and Commissioner Lee Weingart arguing in favor of the issue, and Professor Norm Krumholtz and Councilman Pat O'Malley against. Also, our annual City Club open house for members and prospective members will be next Thursday, November 2nd, between 4:30 and 7 p.m. Now for our traditional City Club questions and answers. We would like Mr. Perot to return to the podium. Those who have an opportunity to address questions to Mr. Perot who were selected by a random drawing immediately prior to the start of tonight's program. Our microphones are staffed by Jim Foster on the right and Barbara Garwood on the left. If you were fortunate enough and your name was drawn as a questionnaire, please proceed promptly to one of the two microphones. May we have the first question, please?
Ross Perot is the most recognized and best candidate, I believe, for the office of the presidency in 96.
Could you speak up, please? We're having some trouble hearing up here.
As the most recognized candidate for president of the United States in 1996, what would you feel is the most important issue going into 96 for your campaign to the American voter to give him an idea and a signal that, you know, this can be accomplished? We can take back the government, currently with the failures of the Clinton administration, to target and really fulfill his campaign promises. What do you feel is going to be the most important thing in your presidency that you'll feel accomplished, you know, that you've done?
The most important thing we have to do is restore trust and confidence in government. We can't get anything done until we've done that. The best way to do that is send both parties a signal, create a new party. Now, let's assume that they wake up and do it all before 96, well, and do it right. So what? It got done, right? I don't think they will, but if they did, eureka. The point is we have to create this party for the majority of the American voters, and then let's assume we have to do it in 97. We have got to restore the trust and confidence of the American people in their government. The fact that they elected their candidate and they did it their way will do a tremendous amount. Then that new group is going to have to deliver and deliver on all its promises. Talk is cheap. In Lech Walesa's words to our Congress, and they should carve those somewhere in the Congress, words are plentiful, but deeds are precious. If we are successful, if we get a united Congress and president into office in 97, boy, oh boy, oh boy, do we have to deliver, right? Because you put them there, right?
Got one for you here. It is common knowledge that you have supported the Republican Party for most of your life, knowing that your third party legitimately cannot win the presidency. Why then will you support third party, which will undoubtedly keep the Republicans out of
okay, the question is, see, the Republicans, once we got going in California, they threw a couple of stumbling blocks in our way. Then they realized we were going to do it. Then they started one-minute ads saying, all they'll do is re-elect Clinton. Third parties never amount to anything. Isn't that interesting? At one time, there wasn't a Republican Party. Lincoln was the father of the Republican Party, and that's what the Whigs were saying. These people never amount to anything. Now, here's the one I love. All this group will do is reelect Bill Clinton. I have not said a word about that propaganda and untrue statement for 4 years. I couldn't take it any longer in California. And so I said, okay, let's get to the facts, folks. Go to the library in California, get the exit polls from the 1992 election. Let's give credit where credit is due. Let's show who elected Bill Clinton president in 1992. The Republican Party did it, and they should have full credit for doing it. That's straight from the exit polls and the facts. Here's how they did it, and here's what we've got to kill, and that's propaganda. In the last 2 weeks of the campaign, they ran a nonstop blitz saying, don't waste your vote for Perot. They did exit polls. If everybody had followed their conscience and voted their conscience instead of not wanting to waste their vote, Howard would have gotten 40% of the vote. Bill Clinton would have gotten 31% of the vote. George Bush would have gotten 27% of the vote. Those are the facts. Now you say, gee, that's interesting. Say, well, how did they respond to that after they were running these ads all over California television? They just went silent. Don't you find that interesting? I'd at least think they'd come back and say, oh, that's not true. No, they just disappeared in a whiff of smoke. I would like to have the next campaign on the issues, not on Willie Horton ads and junk like this. Believe me, if a majority of the voters create a new party, it can elect the people it wants to elect. And don't live with the myth that that's not true. Anybody that can count knows that's not true. Yes.
Mr. Perot, why should 18 through 28-year-olds should vote for you and your party?
Could you understand me? That's really terrible sound. Okay.
Why should 18 through 28-year-olds should vote for you and your party?
It's not for me. The reason they should help form this party and support its candidates is that this party is dedicated to seeing that we put our financial house back in order, and if we don't put our financial house back in order, they simply will not have the opportunities we have had. The only thing that causes me to work on this night and day is that I am probably the luckiest man alive in this country. I was born under very modest circumstances. I worked from the time I was 7 years old, but I've always said I was born rich because of my parents. Then I was lucky enough to marry Margot. Then I was lucky enough to have five of the most wonderful children in the world. You say, Russ, when are you going to talk about your business success? Last. That's the least important thing in my life. But I was fortunate to be very successful in business. I simply cannot sit here and live the good life and let this situation deteriorate, knowing full well that I was a nobody from nowhere that got to live the American dream, and that's what's magic about America. Like in your state, two bicycle repairmen wanted to build an airplane. It makes no sense, right? Say, where'd they go to college, Ross? MIT? No, I didn't get to go to college. Say, well, do they sell new bicycles or fixed bicycles? They fix bicycles. And you think they're going to make the first airplane? There's a Dr. Langley that has a government grant. He's got all the degrees and everything. But the Wright brothers had to fly, right? That's the story of America. Don't ever let anything happen to that. Yes, sir. Ma'am.
Mr. Perot, as a part of our American youth and a recent high school graduate, I am concerned about our educational system. If you were to be elected as president, what reforms will you take to improve the financial opportunities, such as financial aid or grants for college students? And will you also work to improve our high school educational systems in America?
I'm really sorry. I think you're asking me about scholarships and government loans for college students. Is that it? It's really terrible sound.
Okay. Let me repeat my question. Mr. Perot, as a part of our American youth and a recent high school graduate, I am concerned about our educational system. If you were to be elected as president, what reforms will you take to improve the financial opportunities, such as financial aid or grants for college students?
First off, everybody wants a gift from the federal government. Second, how did people go to college before the government gave them loans to go to college? They worked, their families saved, the families sacrificed, and they went out and did it. Now, here is the rest of the story. A huge percent of these college loans never get repaid. When you see people cutting grass, when you see people cleaning the roads, when you see people doing manual work that never got to go to college, they are paying the taxes to pay off that loan that the student that got the college degree never paid back. Now, one way to get through college if you don't have a lot of money is to make such good grades you get a scholarship. Right? That's one way to do it. Keep in mind, we want our children fully educated. When I was a young man, you know what it cost to go to the University of Texas? $25 a semester. And the minimum wage was 40 cents an hour, but at 40 cents an hour, you could get out there and hustle and go do it. And that's the way a lot of Texas boys coming from farms and ranches and nowhere got through college. Now, college tuition has kind of gone through the roof and all that because the dollar is not what it used to be, but then the minimum wage is 10 times what it used to be. And to make a long story short, I run into great young people all the time who are working their way through college. They will have an advantage over the people who don't that is terrific. Believe me, they've been to Harvard Business School and they don't know it. Now, if we can afford some kind of government loan programs, but I sure think they ought to be paid back, and that people with college degrees shouldn't run and hide. And we've got to just think that Uncle Sam is going to take care of us. That's over. We tried it. It didn't work. In a free society, this is the most important thing I'll say. A free society can only thrive and succeed, history teaches us, if it rests on a strong moral, ethical base, and if every individual that can takes full responsibility for his and her own actions. That's something we're stuck with if we want to be free. Yes, sir.
Mr. Perot, it's an honor to have you out here tonight. I appreciate it, as well as I'm sure everyone here. I've been in business for nearly 23 years. Before that time, I learned my profession, went to school for it. Throughout all these many years, the main problem is health care. As the years progress, it's getting more and more devastating for a small businessman to be able to financially pay for the health care as the years go on. In your opinion, as years do go on, what would you think would be the best solution for everyone to be able to benefit with better health care?
We've got to re-engineer health care. We didn't have health care before World War II. Health care started with World War II, and you couldn't give employees a raise, and companies started giving under the law in World War II, and people started giving employees health care. One of the biggest problems with health care, very frankly, is if you have no incentive to check your bill, and you don't in Medicare and Medicaid, then doctors and hospitals can just kind of bill for anything, and over time, that even corrupts honest people. The greatest thing you can do to straighten out health care, both in your company and with the federal program, is to give your employees an incentive to look at it as if they were spending their own money. A number of companies have done that, and the savings have been up to 40%. Not bad, right? Well, that goes back to each individual looking after himself, even though the company's funding it, so on and so forth. We've got to re-engineer the federal health care programs. They've got to be re-engineered carefully, not mindlessly, as they are being re-engineered now. You're going to have to get the leading authorities in health care, not people who don't know anything about health care. No doctors were permitted on the Clinton Health Care Task Force. That's like not letting any architects around designing a big office building. Okay, now get people who really know it, put together the plan, explain it in detail to the American people, then test it. We've never done this to a social program. Get your costs straight, get your benefits straight, recognize that what works in New York doesn't work in a little rural town. Modify the system for different areas, different communities. Finally, when you get it all nailed down and working, you're getting the desired results at the desired cost, then mass produce from successful working models, and we will save the taxpayers billions of dollars a year if we do that on everything we do. Every business person would do that. When I talk to people in Washington about that, they look like me like, what are you talking about? You know, we just shoot it out there, man. We debate it. The lobbyists come in. We change it. We pass it. Print a bill at the last minute. Nobody's read. We pass it into law and freeze it. I didn't mention that. If you froze your business, you'd be out of business in 5 years. Medicare has been frozen since 1965. It's 30 years old. Only the government could keep it alive, right? With your tax dollars. Medicare should be dynamic, and it should be made better every day. The most frustrated people in Washington are the federal employees around Medicare. They know how to make it better. Under the law, they can't, and they're not lobbyists, so they don't have a voice. Next one.
Mr. Perot, under current budget proposals, Congress is asking for cuts in the nation's environmental programs. Many of these programs are beneficial to threatened habitats, endangered species, and national health. Are you in favor of continuing our environmental policy or in favor of cuts?
I apologize, I can't understand a word, and this is a terrible system coming toward me, and I'm really guessing at what everybody's questions are. Okay. Try it without the speaker, just say it out loud to me.
Okay. Under current budget proposal.
Real loud.
Under current budget proposal, Congress is asking for cuts in the nation's environmental programs. Many of these programs are beneficial to threatened habitat, endangered species, and national health. Are you in favor of continuing our environmental policy or in favor of spending cuts?
I'm sorry, I still don't get it. It's not your, you tried, and is, if somebody is controlling the sound system, if there's any way to clean it up. Could you hear it?
The cuts that are being proposed by Congress are threatening habitat, species, and the healthcare system. We address that issue.
Well, that's because they're doing it backward. I just tried to cover how you fix the healthcare system. Whereas you can't just go in and say we're going to take $10 billion here, $50 billion here. You have to first create your new system that will be more cost-effective. Then you have to test your new system and prove that it's more cost-effective and that it still produces results for the American people. Then you know that it will save money. Then if I come to you as a taxpayer and say, here's the new system, it still will get results, it does save us money, you will be tickled to death. But if I just mindlessly cut and whack and slash and burn and hope that somehow, someday, some way, we can make it work at that price, I'd go broke in a hurry in business operating that way, right? That's the whole problem right there, folks. Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Well, I can hear noise.
All right. Can you hear me now?
Try it.
Can you hear me now?
I think so.
All right, first I'd like to state that if you're looking for an energetic young leader to take...
No, please talk real slowly.
First, I'd like to state that if you're looking for a young, energetic leader to take our party's message to Generation X, I'm sitting over here, and you can get in touch with me. Then, I would like to know how you feel about NATO and the part that our country plays in it.
NATO. Okay. I've been very close to armed forces all my life. Probably most of you know that. Certainly the veterans know that. I have very, very strong feelings about sending fighting forces into combat. Number one, I feel very strongly that if and when we're going to send somebody off to fight and die for this country, there should be something in here. You remember the song from World War II? And I heard a voice within me whisper, this is worth fighting for. What is it we're going to fight and send this great young person off to die for? And then my second test is, would you ask your son or daughter to go? One night I had 8,000 business executives in a giant meeting. And they were all pumped up about a little conflict that was coming up. And I said, wait a minute, how many of you have sons or daughters in the armed forces? Five. And I said, okay, I've got it. Now then, how many of you would send your son and daughter off to die for this? Nobody. The last one we had, Desert Storm, there was either two or three or no members of Congress had sons or daughters. FDR's son fought in World War II. Okay? That's a difference. War is not pretty. War is not a game. War is dying. War is getting wounded and living in a wheelchair the rest of your life if you don't die. And you do not send people off to fight and die unless the cause is so important that you would be willing to go fight and die. And here would be my test if I were to be in a position to make the decision. Let's assume the American people are all excited, all pumped up, man, let's go get... Now, we confuse war with sports. You don't die in sports, you do die in war. And the saddest thing in the world to see is a tiny little child who grows up without a father. unless it was a great cause. Now, so I would go to the American people and say, fine, if we need to do this, I think as a matter of conscience, every single one of us must go in spirit into combat with our troops. Every one of us must be willing to make a sacrifice every day our armed forces are over there. And you say, Ross, you're only sending 10. I don't care. It's the principle. You say, well, what kind of a sacrifice can we make every day? I said, well, in World War II, we rationed. We did this, that, and the other. That disturbs the markets if you don't need to do it. But here's what we'll do. We'll all pay more taxes as a matter of principle. And I think everybody said, what? Why would we want to go fight? Now, I would much rather, you take a guy that's going to go get killed, he'd much rather pay taxes and go get killed, right? Think it through, folks. Be hard-minded. But when the time comes, you've got to have your goals, you've got to have your objectives, you've got to know why you're going. Let me give you an example. Everybody loved the 100-hour war. The non-war. Now, let's think it through. Our goals and objectives were stated to be we were going to take out Saddam Hussein, we were going to return Kuwait to the Amir, we were going to get rid of Saddam Hussein's nuclear, chemical, and biological capability, right? All we did was return Kuwait to the Amir. Hussein's still there, his nuclear, chemical, and biological capability are still there, but it was sure entertainment, right? Now let's go to something I know a lot about, the Gulf War Syndrome. Our country turned its back on thousands of people who got it. And if you've ever seen one of these great young people with it, it'll break your heart. And it is real. We have spent a fortune with the finest doctors in medical research trying to crack the code. And this has put me in direct contact with the people who have the problem. And with their wives who have the problem. And with their children who are born with permanent birth defects. They were exposed. The chemical alarms went off. The people who managed those things were called in and sworn to silence later. And on and on and on and on. This is not the way you treat people you send in combat. Whatever it takes to cure those people, you face it, you do it. We did Agent Orange. Remember, we didn't do Agent Orange. All I'm saying is when you send your troops into fight, you stick with them forever, because what you and I are talking about here today is creating a new party, right? I'm talking about fighting and dying. How would you like to have done 8 years in Hanoi? For what? How would you like to have been left behind at the end of the war? Because Watergate was underway. And now that they've declassified all the documents, and you read the Secretary of State writing the Secretary of Defense after the prisoners were home, that we got home, and they're saying, we're going to have to start bombing Laos again because they have all those prisoners of war and we never got them back. Then Watergate hit, and they went forward to the press on April the 13th, 1973, and said, there are no more living Americans in Southeast Asia, and that's, you'd never leave a man on the battlefield, you'd never leave a man behind at the end of the war, a man or a woman, and you don't do stupid things like Somalia, where you have a daylight helicopter raid under UN and NATO command, and only the Lord knows who that person is, what his military training is, and great, great Delta Team members. If you don't know what the Delta Team is, you should know what it is. It's our most elite unit. People earned the Medal of Honor on that raid. They didn't accomplish the mission, but God, were they brave. God, were they brave. And you should be proud of them. Most of you don't even know who they are. I've worn these guys out, so I guess I better go back to Texas. Thank you.
If you wish to order a tape of today's program, please call the City Club at 216-621-0082. Thank you, Mr. Perot. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. The City Club Forum is adjourned.